Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. Before one fateful trip to her attic, writer Ellen Alden knew next to nothing about the life of her ancestors, save for the fact that her own red hair was a throwback to their life in Ireland.
But things changed rapidly after that. Alden now knows a great deal about her heritage, and it was a momentous enough discovery that it led her to set aside her career in teaching elementary school in Massachusetts to write a novel.
This weekend in Milwaukee, she'll talk about that first novel called Yours Faithfully, Florence Burke, and how it was inspired by the real life of her ancestors. But before making the trip to Wisconsin, she spoke with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski via Skype and described what took place that fateful day a few years ago.
What happened was 3 years ago, I discovered 19 Civil War letters in my attic. And they were from, actually, my daughter asked me to go up and look for a picture of myself from when I was young. And I went up and found these boxes that my parents had left in my attic. And they left them when they moved out of New England. And I found this old, old leather box, and I'd never seen it before. So I put it aside, and then I found what I needed and went downstairs and dusted it off. And I opened it up, and I couldn't believe I was looking at these very, very old letters, and I still really didn't know who they were, what they were. And then I noticed that they were addressed to Ellen, Dearest Ellen. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't believe that that's my name also. And so the further I went into them, finally I shut the box and I called my parents and said, whose old letters are they? And I found some tin pictures in there as well. And those were from my great-great-grandfather. They turned out to be from my ancestor, Florence Burke, who emigrated from Ireland.
Before these letters, did you know much about your family's history and Irish heritage?
I didn't know anything about it. I mean, the only thing I knew, I have red hair, and I knew that we were from County Cork in Ireland.
When discovering these letters, what kind of things did you dive into and learn about your family or your family's history in Ireland and even their place in America?
Oh, my goodness. There was so much that I learned. And that's why I sort of became obsessed with this. I was teaching before and I stopped. I thought I was going to take just a short sabbatical, but it ended up being a lot longer. I haven't gone back. But what I started with is, ancestry.com, but that got, tedious. And finally, I decided I just had to go over to Ireland, which I did with our entire family. And that's where I found the exact town that we were from and where I found, just by chance, a historian that was in a newsagent. And he helped me so much because I would send my manuscript back to him and he would make sure everything was historically correct because I really wanted to do his little village well. And so I learned about my great-grandfather's wife, Ellen, and their family and how they were farmers, and they were cattle farmers, cattle ranch farmers. And that's probably the way that the parents who stayed behind in Ireland, that's probably how they survived, because when everybody else was dying of disease and hunger, at least they had their cattle ranch to see them through. They took the harrowing trip across the Atlantic. I learned a lot about how difficult it was and how amazing it was that they actually came here in one piece, and how they survived New York City, which was very difficult back then in 1848, and very difficult for the Irish with the Irish slums and just, the no need apply era. It just was a really tough place for the Irish to hear because there was a lot of, things against them. And then, of course, I learned a lot about the Civil War, too, and how the Irish were treated there as well.
Right. The Great Famine is something that we can broadly summarize from our past history lessons, but what did you want to relearn about this period in Irish history?
I knew that it was bad and horrible, but to have a first-person's perspective when I was going back and writing it with historical fiction in mind, just to have the conversations that families had to have and the sacrifices that they had to make and to see everywhere around their town being destroyed by famine and disease and the fact that they could have gotten help, but help didn't come, not nearly in time. The English, it was so frustrating for them because they were already a poor community and they did rely a lot on the potato. But besides the potato, they did have other crops that they could have eaten, but they were forced to export them. And it was so hard to watch that these people were so frustrated and they didn't have a government of their own. So they had to listen and comply with the English. And I guess I just couldn't believe that a million people died and a million people immigrated. That was a third of their population. And that blew my mind.
Yeah, and I know this is through historical fiction, so we know these things came to pass, yet, you know, you still find yourself getting frustrated by reading these things. And were you surprised by how the Irish immigrants were treated during this period?
To tell you the truth, I actually thought that the potato famine really was just a potato famine, like that they died because everyone grew the potato, and that they just died because they didn't have enough of, you know, they didn't have the potatoes anymore. But I was completely wrong. I didn't know that there was so much. That was all research that I did. I didn't, to tell you the truth, even though I'm Irish, this is probably the biggest thing I learned, was that I didn't know that there were other things that they certainly could have done. They had all these crops that they grew. They had all the cattle. They had vegetables, but they could not, like I said, they couldn't have them for themselves. They had to export them. And then when all the doctors and the medicine, everybody was leaving, what they could have helped the people that were sick and dying, they just had nobody left to help them. And the English did not respond at all until it was way too late. And I think they, you know, so that's why some people call it genocide. But I don't really know if I want to get into that. It's just they definitely did not, I can say with a shadow of a doubt, that they did not do enough to help these Irish people.
Right, which caused your family member, Florence Burke, to follow his soon-to-be wife back to America. And how did you approach constructing the narrative of this book? Because I believe all the letters in here from Florence, are they listed verbatim from the letters that you found?
They are listed verbatim, and that's just how I got inspired to even write this book. So I wanted to make sure that those were the basis of my novel, and everything else I reworked around it. But those I really wanted to keep true. And when I was working with an editor, and there's a few times she thought, well, maybe we could go in this direction, or maybe you could just use a creative license here. I fought for that because I said, but that's, you know, the most important part that I really wanted to make sure. So really, the whole storyline is based on those letters. And I stayed true to what my great-great-grandfather wrote. And what he wrote was pretty amazing. I wouldn't have wanted to change it anyway. And you really can't make that story up, even the very surprising ending.
Right. And in revisiting these letters and kind of having this new perspective back into history through the Irish famine and then the Civil War, did these events put a damper on your spirits or story, or did that give you more determination to, like, bring these struggles to life?
You know, I am the most positive person in the world, and I have to say it kind of did. It was also hard writing and then going back to my, you know, my three children and husband and trying to be like, well, what are we having for dinner? And, you know, let's go to Starbucks because everything's so easy for us. And it was a really harsh winter when I was writing the bulk of this story. And I think those bleak times, and I would go to this third floor of our library, our town library, and I would just write for when my children were in school and write for 4 hours at a time. And I just got myself into another place, another time and another place. But it did. But it also made me appreciate everything that we have. And I especially appreciated the sacrifices and the struggles of my first generation ancestors, Irish ancestors. So there was a lot of sadness, but because it was so inspiring that he helped the next generations after him, I think that's what got me through. You know, this is why I wanted to tell the story so much, is that so many immigrants, not even Irish, but immigrants, you know, from every country go through the first struggles. But boy, to make it beneficial for the rest of your generations, that's huge.
Yeah, and you mentioned writing this during a bleak winter, and in the story, the wife of Florence Burke has to really survive a really bad winter herself. And she's kind of the central piece that holds this family together and this story kind of chugging along. And did you want this book to also serve as a testament to women in wartime, or just women's role in family in establishing?
I really did. What I wanted to do, and the reason why the beginning of the book is by both of their first person perspectives, first by Florence and then by Ellen. And then when he goes to war, the narrative is only told by Ellen. The reason I did that is because I wanted the reader to know what it was like for a woman to be back behind with her family, a mother and wife and, you know, three children, with a farm that she's supposed to tend and manage by herself with her children, and then to only receive letters from Florence. It's just, that's what was really what happened to the women back then. And I wanted to know, the reader know that it was so difficult for her staying back in Massachusetts during that awful winter with, you know, no road to their house and electricity, you know, a well outside that would freeze and, you know, all those things. And I really wanted the reader to know how difficult it was to only hear intermittently from your husband, who you love so much and are praying that will come home. And it's, you know, it's between, this is, of course, the Civil War, so mail was not the most reliable. They were always on the march, so it was very difficult. And I really wanted people to feel for Ellen and her children left behind at home and see how they're struggling just as much as he was struggling.
With Ellen's perspective, and, you know, we can imagine her resentment towards her husband to take advantage of the deal where wealthy landowners could pay anyone or substitute a place if a family was conscripted into the war. And Florence decided to do this so he could own land, but in the process basically left his wife to do everything with how quick he needed to report for duty. So do you think the sacrifice made by Florence Burke to own land and to fulfill that classic American dream was worth it? I mean, in the end, that we kind of know Civil War, there's lots of devastation, so things don't turn out well for Florence, but in the end, it's Ellen's perspective with the need to carry on for her husband's dream. So do you think this was worth it? And what else did you discover about the family?
Yeah, no, I think for Ellen initially, she was, I mean, he was 35 years old. Florence was 35 years old when he decided to make this deal, the draft law, take the draft law. And I think she thought, how on earth can the government or anybody or Florence feel he's not as important as the original man who was drafted, how he was able, this wealthy man was able to trade his place, showing that one person's life is much more important than another person's life, an immigrant's life. And she was much more realistic, knowing that he is literally just there to wave a flag and to be a number. And I think she was so irritated that he would ever, she thought, you know, yeah, we're poor. We are poor in Ireland. We're poor now, but at least we're together. And I think that's how their children felt too, is that they, you know, why are you leaving even though we're poor and, you know, at least we're a family and, you know, we do have a farm and everyone's healthy. And yes, but as it went along, you know, I think that Ellen sort of was able to see. She saw some of the benefits of the trade, that her children now as landowners would be able to go to education past the fourth grade, and that her children would be able to have be citizens and have more respect and also some other liberties that were given to landowners, you know, such as they'd be able to vote eventually and pay taxes and just have a better say in the town. But so towards the end, I have to say that I think that she got it and that, you know, she was much more understanding and she wanted him to know that she wasn't resentful as much anymore, that she, you know, would just bless his sacrifice and you know, that their family was going to be okay if he didn't make it back.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so what I think in general, though, that it was a very, very difficult decision for everyone. And Florence, I think, you know, from him, I think he did think it paid off because of how his kids were able to get the advantages.
Right. And did you look into what happened past the end of this book? What became of Ellen's children and the future generations? I mean, obviously, you're here today. The family did continue on. Did you know of anything that came of the boys, that they made it further in life?
Oh, my goodness. I sure did. Well, the son, Michael, he ended up moving to Maine, and he became the manager of a sawmill. So he did pretty well. But more importantly, his sons, he had like 14 sons, and all of them became successful. One became a judge. One became a dentist. One became a lawyer. So they all really did well, and they all went to great schools like Brown University and Boston University And yes, and then Michael, his grandson, is my father, and you know he's a teacher, and yeah, I think that he did well by his kids. That's for sure. It was the ultimate sacrifice, but I think that he'd be proud of himself. I'm not sure if Ellen would be totally on board, but I think because you know it was hard for her. But I did let her find out that she lived to be 83.
Wow!
So that was one tough lady. I think she had to sell the farm eventually, and I think she might have become a housekeeper for somebody, but she survived and was the grandparent to lots and lots of children, and she never remarried either.
So fascinating to learn. Now that you've completed this book and you took all that time off to envelop yourself in this research and this process, what did you learn in writing this? And it's your first book. Does it make you want to take on another project?
Actually, it does. And I've started another project. I'm actually taking a little diversion because I needed something a little more upbeat. But then I'm going to go back to it, and I'm actually going to write a story about Michael, the son. So, but in the meantime, I'm writing a young adult novel, and it's called Faculty Brat, and it's about a girl growing up where her father becomes the headmaster of the school that she lives and her father works at a prep school in New Hampshire.
Great.
But it's more of a funny, you know, kind of lighthearted teenage angst type deal. Not historical fiction. It's just going to be young adult fiction.
Well, perhaps you will be at a Irish Fest in the future with the book about Michael following yours faithfully.
Yeah. I hope so.
All right. Well, Ellen, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with me today, and I hope you enjoy your time in Milwaukee.
Oh, thank you so much.
Massachusetts writer Ellen Alden's novel is called Yours Faithfully, Florence Burke. It's her first book. Alden will talk about it in the author's area of Milwaukee's Irish Fest this weekend.
One last break, and then we'll share some more music, this time from the Isle of Man, a place that is really a hodgepodge of Celtic cultures. That's when Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio.